Welcome to today's Partner Academy Live webcast, titled, Is Azure Right for My Business? I would now like to turn today's Academy Live session over to John McClelland, Partner Evangelist in the East Region. John, you have the floor.
Good morning, everyone. My name is John McClelland. Some of you may or may not have met me yet. I'm a Partner Evangelist with Microsoft's U.S. Developer and Platform Evangelism team. And I'm based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and my primary job is to work with our development partners in the East region of the United States. If this is the first opportunity for us to meet, let me provide you a little bit of background because some people go, you know, what does a partner evangelist do? So let me share a little background on myself and my role. I've been with Microsoft for almost 13 years. I joined the company back in 1997 and spent the first 5 years in our services division, Microsoft Consulting Services, working with some of our largest customers in the greater Pennsylvania region at the time, if that's what it was referred to. In 2002, I joined a newly formed worldwide division called the Developer and Platform Evangelism Group, and I joined it as a developer and architect evangelist. I kind of did both of those roles back and forth for a number of years. Technical evangelists on my team, well, we focus on driving early adoption of new and emerging platform technology. So whenever you hear of an evangelist, that's what we do. We're all about new and emerging technology. Once we ship it, once it's fully baked out the door 6 months down the road, it's generally off our radar screen and we're moving on to the next technology sets. But in our team specifically, we're focused mainly on developer tools and technologies like Visual Studio 2010, Framework 4, Celeroy 4, and of course, cloud computing. That's just to name a few of them. 2 years ago, I moved over to a newly created role in our team, which we called the Partner Evangelism role. And as the name suggests, I evangelize our emerging platform to the partner community in the EU-US East region. So with that, let's move on to the subject of our presentation, is Azure Right for My Business. Back in December, I teamed with two of our Microsoft partners in the East to develop and deliver a presentation aimed at helping our partner community understand and assess the value of Microsoft's Azure Services Platform. Both organizations had made the decision early on that Azure would be strategic to the development of new business opportunities, and thus they elected to aggressively adopt it as a standard business practice for their company. With their help, we went out on the road. We met with partners up and down the East Coast in 5 major cities, and we went, with the primary goal and objective to share our perspective on Azure and new opportunities it creates for your business. So this brings us to our agenda. So today we're bringing you a slightly slimmed down version of that December content, but nonetheless important version of that December presentation. We'll be recording the session, as Michael indicated to you, the recording is going on as we speak right now, and that'll be for the purposes of, if you find this of value to other members of your team, we ask that you share it with them. Also, in the course of this presentation today, if you're a Twitter advocate like I am as well, we have asked that you use the hashtag #AzureAcademy. If you're going to tweet about the presentation over the course of this session today, we will be following the Twitter account, and hopefully others will be following it as well. And so we ask you to use #AzureAcademy as the hashtag to reference this presentation. So our agenda is quite simple as follows. So after I wrap up here, we're going to be joined by Chris Rolone. Chris is an architectural consultant with Nudesic, and he has been working with Azure basically from the beginning, just like our second speaker here that we'll get to in a moment. So with a little more than a year and a half, he spearheaded early adoption at his company, Nudesic, as well as having led several customer engagements. Chris will provide for you the first, soup to nuts overview of the platform. I saw in the pulling slides that we did earlier, we have a good group of people here that are relatively new, a second majority of group of people that are relatively unfamiliar. They have knowledge of it, but boy, they need some more help, and we're here to help you with that today. So Chris is going to provide that soup to nuts overview of the platform. He will discuss common scenarios where Azure is a fit, what the market opportunity and upside is, how to think about selling Azure, and how to get your team ready to deliver. Chris will be followed by Wayne Beekman. Now, Wayne is co-founder of Information Concepts, and he made the decision early on for his company that cloud computing was going to play an important role in the future of his business. Wayne, for some of you that subscribe to these publications, he's been featured in several technical publications for his work in cloud computing. making the cover most recently of the Redmond Channel Partner Magazine's October 2009 edition. If you have a framed copy of it like I do on my desk, Wayne appreciates that I keep it close by. Wayne will take the opportunity to build on Chris's presentation, offering another perspective on cloud computing and Azure. More specifically, he will share his thoughts on how to engage in strategic discussions with your customers and how to uncover new opportunities. So if it hasn't been kind of clear from that agenda introduction pretty much of our speakers and our topics today, this slide kind of spells it out succinctly. And this is what I hope you get from this presentation, namely how to get started identifying and develop Azure opportunities and to gain a perspective from your peers on real projects and business development initiatives. Before we jump into Chris's talk, if you were on the call slightly before we jumped into our polling slides here, you may have seen this slide that came across. This is the Front Runner for Azure program that we run here today. I want to, you know, call this out. The Front Runner for Azure is a program that helps you get started building your applications on our technology platform. And it's primarily for solution development firms, largely ISVs. So when you go out there and look at it, or if you pull down the PDF that I have in the attachments folder, if you look at the upper right-hand corner of your live meeting session, you'll see sort of three boxes that look like three little notepads together. That's where the attachments are located. You can pull down the PDF on the Front Runner program. Although it's largely for ISVs, many of you that are on this call today are system integrators and maybe thinking of converting some of your intellectual property over to a commercial application. And if that's the case, Front Runner may be for you. It's, again, another way to help take advantage of some Microsoft resources that are being provided for you to help with early adoption of Azure, to help you develop some of your marketing opportunities around it, and basically to take advantage of the program. The next thing I'd like to call out is our BizSpark programs. I always call these out because I think this applies to, no matter what presentation we're giving, applies to a great many of us today out there in and amongst our families and our neighborhood and our school districts. The Spark programs today, we have thousands of individuals and companies in these programs. If you have a university or a high school student in your family or in your neighborhood with a passion for development, they need to take advantage of our DreamSpark program. It puts developer tools in their hands for free. In a down economy like we've been facing, there's a slow recovery is taking place, money is tight, and the cost of capital goods can make or break a software entrepreneur. So if you know of people out there that are looking at just graduating or looking to start a business on their own in the software field, you may want to consider taking advantage of the BizSpark program. It's for software startups that are, you know, looking to basically embrace our platform or even just to test against. Don't even have to develop to our platform. They just may want to test against it. BizSpark has a great program for them with virtually no upfront cost. I think the total cost of that program over 3 years is $100, and that's only when you exit. The next program that we have here, if you're a small professional web development company on this call or design service with 10 or fewer people, then we have a program called WebSpark that is supposed to help provide you know, with the cost of these tools at a very, very reasonable rate, which, again, I think is patterned after BizSpark, and I think it's you know, the tools are virtually free. So, again, something to take a look at. I call them out there just for you in the event that you want to share these with your neighbors, friends, families, or the companies that you work for. Again, the PDFs are in the attachment folder upper right-hand corner of your live meeting session where the three little boxes are to look like notepads. Okay, so with that, without any further delay, I want to turn this presentation over to Chris Rolone. Chris is going to, again, talk about, you know, the soup and nuts presentation on Azure. He'll be followed by Wayne Beekman, who will provide another perspective that will build on Chris's talk. So with that, thank you, everyone. I look forward to your constructive feedback today and to a great presentation. Chris, it's all yours.
Thank you, John, and good morning, everyone, and welcome. So my name is Chris Rolone. I'm an architectural consultant for a Microsoft partner called Nudefic. And as John mentioned, I've been working with Azure practically from the beginning. So it's something that I've developed a lot of experience with. So let's just go ahead and get started. This is our agenda for today. We're going to start by going over Windows Azure overview. I'll start by defining what cloud computing is and then finally get into Azure. We'll talk about the partner opportunity and selling Windows Azure, and finally, the things that you have to do in order to get ready to prepare for Azure. So let's just continue here. So the first question is, and this is something that I get a lot, is what is cloud computing? You could consider it a new style of computing, but if you think about it, hosted services have been around for a while, and that's in fact what Azure is all about and what cloud computing is all about. It's being a hosted service. Now, we're talking about cloud computing in general here, so if you think about what cloud computing is going to provide for you, it's going to provide you with computing power much like a utility. So think of water or an electricity service as an example. This is what cloud computing is all about. You just have cloud computing or computing on demand. Now, there are things that cloud computing provide for you. One of them is hosting. And as I mentioned, hosting has been around for quite a while, but this is on a significantly larger scale, and there are other things that come along with it because you also get storage, you may get a relational database, and there are other services that may be provided for you. Now, you've probably heard of software as a service, but there are also a couple of other things, infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. And with these two, take for example platform as a service, what you're doing is you're getting not only the compute platform, you're getting the operating system and all of the services that are provided by it, and then you have infrastructure as a service where you're being provided with the hardware where your applications are going to run on. One of the things that makes cloud computing interesting is its ability to scale, to handle mammoth capacity. I like to call it its elasticity. You may have very simple demands today, but suddenly your demands grow. You want to be able to grow very easily without having to go out and purchase and provision additional hardware, as an example. That may take a while to do. You'd like the system to be able to just scale to any scale that you need. The other thing that's important about cloud computing is high availability and reliability. Cloud computing systems are designed to be resilient. One guarantee that you'll always hear from anyone that provides cloud computing services is that hardware is going to fail, and cloud computing, if done correctly, will be resilient to that hardware failure, and your applications will continue to run even in the presence of failures like that. Other things that cloud computing provides are self-service management. One of the things that you'd like to be able to do is to just deploy your application out into a cloud service and know that your application is going to be monitored and know that if something occurs, logging is going to occur so that you can look at those logs later and know that your application is going to continue to run and the system is going to do everything necessary in order to make certain that that occurs. Cloud computing you have to think about it as well as something that is going to enhance what you have in the enterprise. It isn't necessarily a replacement for your entire data center. You may choose to run a hybrid model where your application is running locally and maybe you're using the storage capabilities of cloud computing, or the other way around. Maybe you have your application running out in the cloud and is reaching back through services within your own enterprise. So it's not intended to replace the enterprise necessarily. So there are some considerations, and some are pretty obvious. When it comes to cloud computing is obviously going to be off-premise, where if you have your own data center, everything is on-premise. The other thing is that in on-premise, most of the hardware is going to be very much alike or maybe very different. Whereas in the cloud, all of the systems are designed to look pretty much alike and have the same compute power and things like that. Probably the thing that is the most important is that on-premise you have a lot of capital expenditures, whereas off-premise what you have is operational expenditures instead. So you could think of cloud computing as a way to be able to convert your capital expenditures into operating expenditures. The equipment off-premise is leased or owned, or at least a rented, I should say, and on-premises it's typically owned. As far as management, you either have people that you hire to manage the systems for you, or you have your own people. Out in the cloud, of course, it's going to be managed by whoever the hoster is. So what is Microsoft doing in the cloud? Microsoft has jumped into cloud computing in a very, very big way. The biggest thing that they've done is they've developed the Azure platform. And through the Azure platform, you get platform as a service and you get infrastructure as a service. So Azure provides you hosting capabilities, storage capabilities. You have SQL Azure, which is a relational database in the cloud. There are data synchronization tools to allow you to have an on-premise database as well as the database in the cloud and be able to synchronize between the two. And Azure also provides you with communication capabilities and security, and we'll take a look at those individually as we go along. Now, as software as a service, Microsoft also provides things like Office Live and Exchange, SharePoint, Windows Live, and they also bundle a package of, say, Exchange and SharePoint and other software so that you get something called the Business Productivity Operating Suite, or Office Suite, I should say. So let's go ahead and start talking about Azure. So far, we've talked about cloud computing in general, and I've already mentioned that Azure provides you with certain capabilities. So we're going to examine these things individually. We're going to be taking a look at Windows Azure as a platform, and then take a look at SQL Azure, and finally talk about something called the Application Fabric. So what are the things that Azure provides for you? Before I go there, I do want to say that you can consider Azure as an operating system in the cloud. So as any operating system, there are things that an operating system provides for you, and one of them is the ability to run your applications, and that's where you get the ability to have applications running, services running, and these workers are worker roles. So it just provides compute abilities. In addition to that, Azure provides you with storage capabilities, and there are three fundamental abstractions as far as storage capabilities are concerned. One is called blobs, the other queues and tables. And each of these have different uses. Blob is, as the name implies, allows you to have very, very large objects. There are a couple of different types of blobs. One that will allow you to have files up to 200 gigabytes in size, and another one that will let you have a file as large as a terabyte. And queues are ways for you to just drop units of work that background workers are going to be able to derive from. Tables, you can think of a table as being similar to an ADO.NET data table where you have columns and rows with some limitations in that you can't define your own indexes. There are indexes that are already defined for retrieving data. And finally, as of February, they also announced the ability to mount an NTFS volume, which is persistable and will be visible across all of your services. On the management side, Microsoft also provides the ability to manage the fabric, to stage your application, and to deploy it into production as well. Now, SQL Azure is your relational database in the cloud. It is just a subset of what SQL Server 2008 provides for you in the sense that there are some things that are still not supported. As an example, the spatial data types aren't supported at this time. So it isn't as if SQL Azure is capable of doing everything that you have in the that you do on-premise in your database, but still it is a very functional relational database. Now, there are other limitations as well, and these limitations are there for a variety of reasons, which we can discuss at the end. But you have a choice of two different size databases. At the time that you create your SQL Azure account, you have to choose when you create a database what size database you want to create. It's either going to be a 1 gigabyte database or a 10 gigabyte database. And these limitations are there for a variety of reasons, but the way that Microsoft came up with these numbers is they did a survey of thousands of companies and discovered that something like 95% of all departmental databases, which is what they're targeting here, will fit within this 10 gigabyte range. Something like 85% will fit within the 1 gigabyte range. So SQL Azure is not designed for your large enterprise databases that are terabytes in size. The other thing that is provided for you through the Azure portal is the ability to manage your databases as well. You can add logins as an example, or you can even use the SQL Server Management Studio as well. And one of the tools that you can use for synchronizing between a database that you have on-premise and off-premise is the SQL Data Sync tool. The application fabric, this is probably one of my favorite things that Azure provides for me, because I am a developer that spends a lot of time developing WCF services, and this provides me with some capabilities that I can do on-premise but are a little bit more difficult. Creating WCF services is a fairly easy thing to do, but securing them gets to be a little bit harder, especially if you're trying to expose them out to the world. Well, Microsoft came out with something called the Service Bus, which is, in effect, a relay service. What happens is you can use the relay service as a way to register your services that are running within your data center, and then anybody that wants to connect to your service just connects to the Service Bus, and the Service Bus just acts as a relay. It's even capable of getting out of the way and providing a direct connection, but if it can't do that, it just remains in the middle and acts as a relay. So it's a way for you to have a lot of control over who has access to your service as well. In addition to that, there's the access control service. And you can think of the access control service as being access control similar to what you have within Windows, the ability to control who has access to what within your service bus, as an example. You can even control who has access to what messages are going to be sent. You have a lot of fine-grained control there. The access control service is based on what used to be called Geneva, but it is now fully implemented out in the cloud. The management capabilities, similar to what we had with Azure and SQL Azure, you can use the Azure portal to be able to manage your services, and using the access control service, defining who has access to what services within whatever services that you are providing. Now, this is what the management portal looks like. We don't really have time for me to bring it up here, but it looks exactly like this. When you log in, you have the ability to go to your application, and what we're looking at here is where you deploy your application and provision your application. So once your application is provisioned and deployed, you choose to deploy it to either staging or production. Now, what's interesting there is notice that there is a staging site. When you deploy to staging, you should be able to see in that website URL that you have the equivalent of a GUID there in order to access staging. That's because that's not something that you're going to expose publicly. You're not going to be giving that URL to your customers. It is a way for you to be able to test to make certain that your application is, in fact, working. And once that you're convinced that everything is working, you can then promote it. That button in the middle allows you to do a VIP swap between production and staging. Now, what's cool about that is if you already have something out in production and you decide that you want to promote staging to production, what happens is production just becomes staging and staging becomes production. If for some reason or other you do in fact have a problem, you can always do a VIP swap back. That's why there are two different portals that you're going to deploy to. From here, you can also stop and start your services. You can scale your services as well. One of the things that you can do is you can go into the configuration file from here, and you can tell it that you want to scale from 2 servers to 10 servers to 50 servers, whatever the number is. You can scale up and scale down. I mentioned that cloud computing provides you with the ability to kind of have an elastic computing nature where you can just scale up to any size that you'd like. But it's also just as important to be able to scale back, because you might have a seasonal business where you're very busy November through December, as an example, but the other 9 months of the year, you're not very busy. So in January, you'd like to be able to scale back and only pay for what you're using, and that's exactly what Azure provides for you. Upgrades are done through here, and you can also delete services from here. So this is a complete management experience that you have here through the portal. Now, there are some competitive differentiators as well. The biggest difference is the automated service management, the ability to just deploy your application out into the cloud and understand that Azure is going to do everything that it can to make sure that your application is running. You provide a little bit of metadata. That little bit of metadata is going to be configuration information and also information about how many instances that you want running, and Azure will take care of the rest. It'll spin up virtual machines for however many instances that you said you want run, or scale it back if you've decided to reduce that number. It also through an agent monitors all instances of your application that are running. So what happens is, if any one of those instances goes down, Azure is going to take some remediation and try to restart the application if it needs to, reboot the virtual machine, and if necessary, it can even take that virtual machine out of rotation, build a whole new virtual machine, and give you the instance that had failed. So you always have the number of instances that you said that you wanted. One of the things that's really compelling from my perspective, because I've worked on several teams migrating applications over to Azure, is that my developers don't really need to learn any new skills. I mean, obviously there are new things that they have to learn, but they can continue to use the existing skills that they have and use the existing developer tools. So you'll be developing for the cloud using Visual Studio as an example. You'll just be using different templates. If you start to get into using the file system as an example, the blobs, the queues, and the tables, then there are some new skills that you're going to have to learn there, but there are libraries that will make things easier for you. If you're going to be using SQL Azure, on the other hand, you can literally just change a connection string and point it from an on-premise database to something that is running in the cloud, and your application will just work once you've migrated your database over. Now, the other thing that Microsoft provides, they have a breadth of offerings. There are so many things that they provide within Azure as well. As I mentioned, you've got the file system, you've got SQL Azure, and you've got all of the compute capabilities. There are other things that are provided for you as well. Azure, when it first came out a year and a half ago, or when it was first announced, was really a scale-out solution. And by that, I mean, if you wanted to be able to scale your application up, what you did was you told Azure how many instances of your application you wanted running. So it would just scale out accordingly. Well, one of the things that they announced at the last PDC is that Azure is now also a scale-up solution. And by that I mean, if you have something that is very, very compute intensive, you can ask Azure to give you a virtual machine of different size. If you choose the small size as an example, you get a single processor machine. You can choose a medium size, which will get you a dual processor. You can choose a large size, which will get you a quad, all the way up to extra large, and you have an 8-way. And obviously, when you choose larger virtual machines, it's because you have very compute-intensive applications, and you could take advantage of that. Now, the other thing that Microsoft has done in a very big way is support something called Software Plus Services. Now, Software Plus Services is a little different than Software as a Service, where your application is just running out on the cloud. Software Plus Services takes advantage of the fact that you may have applications running in the data center, and you may choose to run services out in the cloud, or perhaps just use some of the storage capabilities in the cloud, either using the Azure file system or using SQL Azure. You can run a hybrid model that way. In other systems, your application has to run completely in the cloud, as an example. The other thing that that Microsoft provides as part of Azure is integration at the security, data communication, and network level. And this is done through the access control system. So you have complete control over who has access to what. When it comes to SQL Azure, as an example, you can actually choose a specific IP address that has access to your database. So you can control that to a very fine degree, in addition to being able to provide SQL logins. And then Microsoft provides Microsoft Pinpoint as an example. Pinpoint is a site that you can go to be able to advertise your business as an example. There are a variety of programs that Microsoft provides that you can take advantage of. So let's talk about the Azure purchasing models. Now, there are basically three models. One is based on consumption, one is based on subscription, and the other one is based on volume licensing. Now, consumption just means pay as you go. And so you're just paying on a monthly basis, and if your business grows, you can scale your application up. The subscription model will actually reduce the price a little bit, because what you're doing is you're making a commitment to Microsoft for some period of time, so that allows them to price you a little bit differently. And obviously, on the volume licensing side, they can give you even more discounts because you are purchasing in volume. There are other things that you get as part of MSDN Premium, as an example. You do get a certain amount of time within Azure for free. NPM partners get a 5% discount. There are a number of accelerators available as well. And, of course, Microsoft provides the SDK. Now, one of the things that customers often want, they'd like to be able to know how much is running on Azure, is Azure going to save me, if anything at all? So they've developed a TCO analyzer tool, and using this tool is actually pretty cool. Nudesic developed one long before this one came out, but this one, when it finally came out, is a little bit more comprehensive. What it allows you to do is it allows you to put in the type of business that you have, what your usage patterns are, whether logins are required, and a number of other factors as well. And what the tool is going to do is it's going to come out with some recommendations as to what you're going to need out in the cloud. It'll tell you the amount of storage space that you're going to need or likely going to need. It's going to tell you the number of instances that you're likely going to need. And based on all of this, it's going to come up with a dollar figure to let you know approximately how much it's going to cost you. Other things that you can put in there are your cost today so that you can get a comparison, a true comparison of what Azure is going to cost you versus what you're paying for on-premise. So it's a really valuable tool for you to sit down with your customers, as an example, and be able to show them how, if they migrated their application to Azure, they can save money. Now, there are some common scenarios for Azure. The common scenarios is hosting of consumer websites. So that's one that is probably the most common. And an example of that is you've got online stores, you've got social networking sites, and you've got health portals. Applications like this are made for Azure because, A, you want to be able to take advantage of Azure's elasticity. I mentioned earlier that you might have a seasonal business, as an example, where 9 months out of the year you're not very busy, so you can run a few instances. Maybe you can get by with just a couple of instances of your application running out in the cloud, but suddenly during the Christmas season or as you approach the Christmas season, maybe your business grows tenfold, a hundredfold, whatever the number is. You can go in and through a simple change of a configuration parameter, you can suddenly handle that load. You don't have to go out and purchase hardware to handle the worst case. And things like social networking sites where it needs to be able to scale in order to get proper response time and everything else, and health portals, all of these things require that the system be able to scale appropriately. Other scenarios, you've got hosting and corporate department apps, you've got ISV multi-tenant SaaS applications. That's a good one for the cloud, as an example, such as Salesforce Automation or Project Management Portal. You just have your application running in the cloud. You divide up the data across multiple SQL Azure databases, as an example, and as they log in, you just go out and reach for the data as needed. Other scenarios, B2B hubs, data archiving, all of these are common scenarios that will work on Azure very well. So what I have here is a demo that I'd like to do. Some of you have seen this. It's called the Wikipedia Explorer. Now, this application here happens to be a hybrid application, as I was describing a little bit earlier, in that the application itself is running on my desktop. This is a WPF application, and to give you a little bit of history on this application, is what it's going to do, or what it does, is it figures out what all of the relationships are on with the documents that exist on Wikipedia. If you know anything about Wikipedia, you know that they have millions of documents out there. One of the things that Wikipedia allows you to do is to download the database, but that database is just enormous in size. And so what .NET Solutions did was they downloaded this database, which is very large, and they went about the process of converting it from wiki code into XAML code. Now, one of the things that they did was they estimated that if they were to do this on a single server, that it would take somewhere like 4 to 6 months to figure out all of these relationships. It was an enormously complex process to do this. They were able to do this in less than 4 days by just running on Azure on 50 servers. So keep that in mind. This application is actually being serviced by a number of servers that are running out in the cloud for its data. So what I'm going to do here to give you an idea of how this works is I'm just going to begin typing, and I'll just type in cloud computing, let's say, and I'll select that. And what it's doing is it's going out and getting all of the information about the relationships of any documents with cloud computing in it, and you can see how it begins to build this tree. Now, what's cool about this application is you'll notice that the topic is in the center, and then you've got these other relationships that exist as well. So I can go in and I can select, let's say, internet. And what it's going to do, and it's going to put that as a central topic and figure out what the relationships are. And you can see it's pretty responsive considering the amount of data that it has to sift through in order to be able to build this. And you've got a lot of information on here as well. So here's internet, and you can see what the relationship is of all of these documents to the central topic that you've chosen. And you can go in any direction. So I can go in U.S. state. Obviously, it has some relationship with internet, and you can see how this progression works and how these relationships work as well. So this is a very compute-intensive application. Okay, so that just gave you a little bit of an idea of an application that is a hybrid, that is running on-premise but is reaching out into the cloud. I can tell you about other companies. I know Kelly Blue Book, who's based in Irvine, California, as an example. They're actually using Azure as kind of a hot standby, is one way to think of it. They have two data centers. They had one in Irvine, they had one in Las Vegas, and what they wanted to be able to do was to reduce their cost. So what they did was they set their application up to run in Azure as well. Eventually, and this is just a guess on my part, they'll run everything on Azure, but they have a large expense that they've already gone through in their data center, so there's no need for them to completely migrate off. They still have the data center that exists. But they're in the process of closing their Irvine data center, and they're saving something like $100,000 a year by being able to do that. And they can run their application either in the cloud or on-premise as well. So let's go ahead and talk about the partner opportunity. So what's driving cloud computing? If you think about it, what's driving cloud computing is cost. I mean, having a data center and maintaining a data center is something that's very expensive. So if you take a look, what they're trying to do is to reduce their capital expenditures, and 40% of CIOs plan to cut their IT budgets. That's just the nature of the beast. I've been in this business for many years, for more than 30 years now, and for some reason or other, it seems like IT, as important as IT is to any organization, is always the one where cuts are made. And it's as true today as well. So that's one of the things that's driving cloud computing. Their CIOs are looking for ways to reduce their costs. The other thing that they want to do is they want to drive value for the business. They want to be able to take have their applications be able to scale a little bit better as well without having to cost a lot of money. They want to know that their applications are going to be secure as well. They want to exceed whatever limitations that exist within their current data centers without having to spend a lot of money. I'm working at a customer right now, as an example, that just recently spent something like $20,000 provisioning a single server. And that was a lot of money that they spent. And I spoke to them, and mentioned, and we've been in talks about how they might be able to reduce some of that cost by moving things out into the cloud. But you can see that there are a number of surveys that have been done, and there are a lot of concerns that CIOs have, from security to reducing capital expenditures to any number of different things. So IDC has done a survey, and one of the things that they're doing is they are predicting that the adoption of the cloud is just going to continue to increase. And you can see that today something like $16.2 billion is being spent. By 2012, that's going to increase to $42 billion. So you can see that a lot of money is being spent by companies, and that companies are taking this very seriously. Now, most companies can't just close their data centers and migrate everything to the cloud. That's not realistic. There are long-term leases, as an example, that are in effect. So what companies can do, and what you can do as a partner with companies, is talk to them how they can begin to use new development and migrate those applications or write those applications to take advantage of what the cloud has to offer. So where is the cloud compelling? So any application that requires massive scale, that's probably the best possible example. Any application that is going to require large-scale computing that will have to have the ability to not only scale out but scale up, an example being a social networking site, that is certainly an application that will fit into the cloud very easily. Applications that need high reliability. Azure provides that for you because of the way that Azure monitors your application. We don't have time to get into the technical details, but there is an overseer, as I like to call it, called a fabric controller, that is actually monitoring the entire data center. It treats the entire data center as just one large resource pool. So it knows when virtual machines go down, as an example, and if it needs to, it can just spin up other virtual machines, and it's doing this for you to make sure that your application is always running. So that's where the high reliability comes in. And the 911 call center, I think you'll agree, is an application that requires high reliability. Applications with variable load. I gave you an example a little bit earlier, but online tax preparation. You know, I have friends that are accountants, and you know, for a couple of months leading up to April 15th, they're working 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, as an example, and they have large computing needs as well. So variable load cloud computing is very compelling in that story. Applications with unpredictable lifetime. Hurricane relief site, as an example, applications requiring parallel processing. Genome sequencing is a great example there. That Wikipedia Explorer is another example. It needed the ability to scale out. Now, I mentioned one of the things that I failed to mention with the Wikipedia Explorer is that although it took them 4 days to completely convert the wiki code into XAML, today they would probably be able to do it in less than a day, because at the time that they did that conversion, they only had a scale-out solution. Today you also have a scale-up solution, and if they chose to take advantage of that, they would probably be able to reduce that computing time significantly. Apps that have to scale fast or fail fast, startup online services as an example. One of the things that I like to say about Azure is that it is a great place to do experimentation. If you have an idea for the next great internet business, as an example, without having to spend a lot of money by going out and buying a lot of servers, as an example, you can sit down, have your application created, you can deploy it to the cloud, you can test it, and if it takes off, great, you'll just scale it up as needed. But if you decide, as an example, that the business model isn't working, or the application isn't working as you thought it should, or as it needs to, or maybe people aren't interested in it, you can take it off the cloud, and you have no capital expenditure. So it's a great thing to do in that regard. So how will the channel work for you? Okay, there are a couple of scenarios there. There are two models when you go to market. One of them is the embedded Windows Azure platform model. And in this particular case, you're building your application for the Azure platform. So you run the application. This is more a SaaS solution, where you create this application, you deploy it to the cloud, and what happens is that anybody that wants to use your application is just using your application from the cloud. In that case there, your customers are going to be paying you, and you're going to be paying Microsoft for the use of Azure. So you could use whatever services are available to you, and you can get discounts, as an example, from Microsoft, depending on the model that you choose. There's another one built for the Windows Azure platform. In this case here, customers are going to buy applications and Azure from a partner. So that works a little bit differently. And you can see how that works there as well. And the customer has to purchase, the use of Azure, and also has to pay you for your application. So other benefits to partners, from an ISV perspective, the ability to increase productivity. I've spoken a little bit about avoiding upfront cost as an example. But the other thing that you have is increased agility. Now, the ability to make decisions very quickly about scalability, as an example, is something that's very important. Also, it opens up new revenue streams because you can come up with other ideas and you can experiment with them because, again, as I mentioned earlier, you have the ability to use Azure as a great experimental platform. If you're a VAR, you're a custom software developer, the ability to manage your applications much more easily, the ability to scale your application with just the change of a single parameter, that is something that is very compelling. From a hoster's perspective, you can add new services, you can expand geographically. I mean, there are any number of things that you can do. And there are advantages for everyone. There are plenty of advantages for partners in this space. So let's talk a little bit about selling Windows Azure. Okay, so what are some of the benefits? If you take a look at these pillars up at the top, you've got the big items there. You've got get your costs up under control, faster time to market, outsource IT headaches, focus on business, not infrastructure. All of those things are critically important. CIOs are already trying to reduce their costs, and one of the things that you can do is take advantage of Azure and the ability to be able to control your costs in that way. If you use the TCO analyzer tool as an example, you can know up front what your cost is going to be. But the fact is that running your application out in Azure allows you to convert your capital expenditures to operational expenditures, and that's something that's important to CIOs today. Probably one of the biggest reasons for any company to consider using Azure, and we'll take a look at a chart here in a little bit, is the ability to eliminate idle IT capacity. Think about it. If you have to build a data center in order to be able to handle worst case needs, in order to be able to handle high volumes of traffic, even if 9 months out of the year you're not very busy, that's a lot of money that you're spending, and that capacity is being wasted. It's just sitting there idle. I've been in many, many data centers where they've had large capacity, and the vast majority of the time that capacity is just going wasted. Well, Azure gives you the ability to use only the compute power that you need by scaling up to whatever your needs are and scaling back when you no longer need it. The efficient use of IT dollars through some of the things that I've already spoken about. You know, faster time to market, I mentioned the experimental nature of Azure, the ability to just deploy your application, test it, see how it's selling, see what type of interest there is. If you've done your homework and you've done everything correctly, then your application is just going to sell like hotcakes, and you'll be able to deploy it and manage it very easily. And this is something that can be done without an enormous investment. The outsourcing IT headaches. This is something that I know a lot of people have a headache having to manage a data center, as an example, and the problems that are inherent in having a data center. Well, all of that is being outsourced. So, in effect, what you're doing is you're allowing Microsoft to manage your IT infrastructure for you rather than you having to have people that manages that. And you get high availability, and you get an SLA that requires will give you some guaranteed SLA requirements as well. You don't have to anticipate future capacity. This is what I was talking about a little bit earlier. If you know that your business is suddenly going to get very busy from one day to the next, or even from one moment to the next, and I've had customers ask me or tell me that every single day between the hours of 1 and 5 o'clock, as an example, their business just goes crazy because of the nature of the business they're in. So their capacity, they need a lot of capacity during those hours, but outside of those hours,
it's not nearly as busy. Well, because of the way that Azure works, you know, at noon or 12:30, you can go in there and you can tweak the parameter that says I want to be able to scale up to 10 servers, and then at 5 o'clock, you can scale it back to 2 servers. So this is something that you can do without having to make huge upfront commitments. Another thing that is a headache for any IT department is the security patches. As you know, Microsoft comes out with regular patches on, they call it Patch Tuesday. You have to manage applying those patches, and I've been to a lot of data centers that for whatever reason fall behind on these patches. When it comes to things like security patches, where you might have zero-day exploits, as an example, I'm going to patch these systems for you. It's not something that you have to be concerned about. And, of course, with this,
you get reduced complexity as well. And then you can focus on what your core business is. Now, in the final pillar, the only thing that you're doing is worried about your core business. The IT part of it is just going to be managed for you. Your applications are things that you still have to be concerned about, but when it comes to running those applications and your data center and everything else, that's something that is being done for you. So you become more competitive through innovation, as an example. Your risks are reduced as well because you don't have this data center to maintain and the problems that are inherent in having in doing that. And I've mentioned experimentation before, the freedom to experiment. That's something that is extremely critical to any business without a large capital expenditure. So this is one of the things that I was talking about a little bit earlier. If you take a look at this graph, you see this stair step here. Well, basically what the stair step means is that you've got this line here, that dashed line, which is the ideal IT needs. But you've got this stair step where you've got very large there where you've got a lot of computing power, and the blue line is showing you what's actually being used. So the problem with that is that you've got very large periods of time there where you're just wasting the capacity of your systems. So you can see that grayed-in area as an example. That's just wasted capacity. What you actually needed fell below the ideal line, as an example. And then there are other times where you don't have enough capacity. The volume of traffic for your application has increased beyond your data center's ability to be able to manage it. One of the stories that I like to tell is a Super Bowl story of a few years ago where Victoria's Secret advertised in the Super Bowl that there was a commercial that was only going to be running on their website. And what happened was, men being men, they just went out to the Victoria's Secret website, and they took their servers down for 3 days. And that was because at the time that commercial was planned, they had no idea what their capacity was going what the capacity needs were going to be, and everybody visiting their site ended up taking their site down for 3 days, which I think everyone will agree is a bad thing. You wouldn't want to do that in your business. So other things, you have fixed costs if you have your own data center because you have to maintain a data center large enough for to handle the worst case. I'm working at a customer right now as an example, and this is something they've told me over and over again, that they spend a lot of money for their data center because they need to know that they're going to be able to handle the very worst case needs. Well, that's a fixed cost. That's a lot of money that is being paid. That's just an inefficiency. On the other hand, if you have your application running in the cloud, you can tweak the number of instances that you have available to you to be able to handle whatever the anticipated load is. So again, if you take a look at the trend line there in the middle, you can see the blue line where we're falling below that trend line and going above that trend line as well. But you're able to match what your needs are, and that's what's important. And you're only paying for what you use as opposed to paying for capacity that you don't need. So your initial investment is reduced significantly because, again, you're not having to go out and spend a lot of money on servers that are going to be able to handle some need that you believe you're going to have. That may never materialize, as an example. So it also reduces oversupply, so you're going to be able to match very closely what it is that you need by scaling up and scaling down as necessary. I always tell people that scaling up is a great story, but scaling back for a lot of businesses is also very important because what you're doing is reducing your IT costs by scaling back to a load that you need. So when you're falling below the line, as an example, you know that you're only going to be paying for the capacity that you need. There's no undersupply as well. So let's talk a little bit about service levels. I mentioned SLAs a little bit earlier, and what you're looking at are the announced service levels for different parts of Azure. So you can see there that they have an SLA of 3.9s mostly. You've got 99.95% uptime month to month for compute connectivity. And you have 99.9% for instance monitoring and database activity and storage availability. So you can see that there are clear and simple SLA guarantees there, and they're pretty well defined. So given what the cost of Azure is, this level of uptime I think is pretty good. It's not on the order of 5 or 6 nines as an example, certainly, but my guess is that these things are going to improve over time. So as a partner, the question then becomes, how do you talk to your customers about Azure? And there are a variety of ways to talk to your customers. I like to call them pitches. There's the elevator pitch, where you're talking to your customer and you're saying, you know, cloud computing or Azure is like electricity. It's like a utility. It's just always there. If you need more, you can just increase the number of instances and you get it. It's fairly cheap. It's always there. It's always available. If you have a little bit more time, maybe you're going out to dinner with your customer, there are other things that you can get into as well. You can talk to them about the fact that they can control their costs because they're only going to pay for the things that they need within Azure. So if you only need a couple of instances of your application running, then you're going to be paying for 2 instances as opposed to having to have a data center that has 10 servers, 20 servers, 30 servers, whatever the number is, in order to be able to handle the worst case for your application. The other thing that you could talk to them about is it's a faster time to market. You don't have to go out and provision servers on an as-needed basis. You go in and just change a number, as an example, increase that number. You can experiment with Azure, as I've mentioned before, where you might have some great idea for the next application for the cloud, and you can deploy it on Azure and try it. Outsourcing IT, so no headaches as far as that is concerned. Power on tap. And innovation and experimentation is something that is inherent with Azure. And finally, if you're playing golf with them, You can talk to them about any number of different things. We've talked a little bit about controlling costs and outsourcing IT. We've talked a little bit about compete, but there's also the big one, being able to change your capital expenditures to operational expenditures. That really affects the bottom line, as an example. The self-service thing, having that going with your application, making sure that your application is always running, and logging information about the performance of your application so that you can look at this information later. So all of these things are things that you can do with your customers depending on the amount of time that you have. The more time that you have, the more detail that you can provide to help them understand where Azure is going to be able to help them and what it does for them. Now, naturally, there are going to be some objections, and there are things that you can do. One of the things that I've heard a lot is that, you know, I don't trust Microsoft, and that often requires a longer conversation. You know, I don't like to hear, you know, just trust me. I mean, to be fair, if the customers were fair, they'd know that Microsoft has done an enormous amount in recent years on any number of different things to address that trust issue. Microsoft hasn't been doing this for very long. Well, that's not entirely true either. If you take a look at Microsoft's data centers, they've been managing very large data centers for a long, long time. If you take a look at an application like Bing, something that you guys might not be aware of, Bing, the search engine within that Microsoft has, is running on 100,000 servers. That's a large number of servers, and you have to agree that that Microsoft knows a lot about managing online communities and data centers. It's something that they've done for a very long time. They don't want to be locked into the Azure cloud. That's fine as well. I've worked with customers before where we were able to set up applications that ran both on-premise and off-premise. There are things that you have to consider when you do that that requires a longer conversation, but it is possible to do. I worked with one customer in Denver, as an example, where with just the setting of the switch, you could run the application on-premise or you can run it in the cloud, and the customers that were using it didn't know the difference. Putting sensitive data in the cloud, well, that's something that, again, requires a larger conversation, but I like to tell people is that there are some applications that, at least for now, aren't made for the cloud. As an example, if you have HIPAA requirements, if you have to meet PCI standards, those are probably things that you don't want to push out into the cloud because Azure cannot meet those requirements. And the same thing with legal or regulatory boundaries as well. So some technical objections. They have their own data center. I mentioned that you can just use the cloud to augment their data center. Security and privacy concerns. Microsoft has done a great deal in this area with respect to Azure and, again, requires a much longer conversation, but with the access control service, you have complete control over who has access to your data, as an example. As far as losing your data is concerned, you can use SQL Azure for redundancy is one thing that you can use it for. And one common objection, not using .NET. Azure doesn't require the use of .NET. If you have an application that's written in PHP or Python or Ruby or Java, it'll run in the cloud as well. Migrating existing applications, that's something that I've had some experience with, and it always comes down to how well the application is written. The better the application is written, the better separation of concerns in your application, the easier it is to migrate your application. It is generally straightforward, but as I mentioned, it really comes down to how well the application is written to begin with. The development of new applications, you're going to be using familiar tools and using familiar skill sets. You don't have to completely retrain your developers. They just have to learn how to use some of the, if they're taking advantage of things like Azure tables, queues, and blobs, just taking advantage of the library to be able to store things in the file system in the cloud. You can write applications, as I mentioned, that will run in the cloud or locally. As far as security is concerned, that Microsoft provides physical security and logical and geo-redundant security for their data centers. There are a number of certifications that they've already received with respect to security, and there are others that they're working on as well. Reliability. These data centers are designed to be highly resilient. Some of these data centers will house as many as 500,000 systems in them, as an example. So the fact that it's reliable and redundant is just something that is built into the structure of what Azure is all about. And Microsoft provides the management tools to be able to easily manage your application. Now, as far as support for customers, there are any number of things that Microsoft provides for support. There's online self-help. There's assisted support as well. Since you guys are going to be getting these slides, I'm just going to go by these because I've only got a couple more slides. I'm just about done here. On the partner readiness side, there are any number of places that you can go to, but where you're going to want to start is by going out to Azure.com. If you go out to Azure.com, that is the central portal for all information on Azure, and there are a lot of other places that you can go to as well. So you can see there that there are a number of links that are provided for you, but probably the most important one for really learning about what Azure is all about, especially if you're a developer, is by going out to Azure.com. It is from there that you're going to be able to download the SDK and begin development. Well, that's it for my presentation. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoy the rest of the presentation.
Chris, this is John McClellan. Two very, very quick questions, given your experience in developing applications. One is, what's the general feel for the amount of time it takes to port, say, a web app to Azure as it exists today? I know that's kind of an open-ended question, but... It is
open-ended, but as I mentioned, it always comes down to how well the application is written. The company that I worked with, one of the companies that I worked with, this was the best possible experience. We were able to migrate their application, and this was an application that had both an on-premise component as well as an off-premise component. We were able to migrate their entire application in 4 weeks, and that was... providing them with the ability to use the Azure file system, completely migrating their ASP.NET web application, and we did all of that in a four-week period. They were up and running, they were happy, they were able to scale, and it was a great experience all around. But that application was well written to begin with, and obviously I'm sure everyone here that has ever done any type of migration knows what I'm talking about. If you have applications that are not very well written, they're going to be more difficult to migrate into something like the cloud.
And we have two, that was a question that was actually put up on, it was a tweet, so thank you for whoever put that out there. The next question I have is actually they're similar. Clients are worried about securing their clients' critical sensitive information in this multi-tenant cloud model. How do we build confidence? And then the second question that was put up there that is similar in that is there a place where there's a detailed discussion on legal regulatory challenges for Azure, handling of personal, identifiable personal information? So, you know, building confidence and putting, you know, secure information up there, another kind of reading about, a discussion around the legal regulatory challenges for Azure and I'm assuming cloud computing in general.
Sure. As far as building confidence is concerned, one of the things that you have to understand is that Azure is really a hosting solution. It's a hosting solution on a very, very large scale, but it is no different than you running your application out in Rackspace, for example, which is also a multi-tenant solution. Your applications are running in virtual machines. These virtual machines are segregated from one another. There's no way that one virtual machine is going to be able to see what another virtual machine is doing, as an example. If you're using the Azure storage system, there is an account that you're given, that you create, and it is through that account that access to the file system is made. So unless that account is compromised, there's no way that they're going to be able to access that. And from the portal, you can go in and even change not the account number so much, but there are access keys. You can easily change those access keys. So from a security perspective, from a confidence perspective, once you begin to understand how these things are secured, you can understand that it's not something that's going to be easily compromised unless you made the information available somehow, if you leaked the information. Now, as far as the discussion on the regulatory requirements, there are a number of, I don't have a list in front of me, but there are a number of groups out there that are beginning that discussion. I know that there is, there are a group of people that have gotten together and are trying to start a very big conversation on cloud computing and being able to secure the cloud and to create some standards and things like that. So there are things like that that are already starting. One of the things that I like to say about meeting regulatory requirements is that the laws and standards have not really caught up with the technology. And the technology is far ahead of where things are with respect to regulatory requirements. One could argue that your data is going to be more secure in the cloud than it would be on-premise. And I have a security background, so I can say that because I know that something like 75% of all attacks occur from within a company. You're not going to have physical access to anything, so that eliminates that. So you can very easily control who has access to what in the cloud, much more easily, I think, than you can within a data center.